Hello, listeners. This episode is a fun one. I go on an ADD thought process hopscotch. Chloe tries to rein me in, but also doesn't. There's bosses, sadness, gays in camp, lots of stuff. But also, as such, there is a lot of talk about dark topics, so just be prepared to be a little bummed out, you know?
I don't have a clever intro, so I'm just going to say this. I TPK'd Val last night. Welcome to In Media Less, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val, and I hope Dan does not listen to our podcast.
He doesn't listen to our
podcast. I know he doesn't.
So before we get into our topic for today, which is Baldur's Gate Act 2. Oh, yeah, grip it and rip it.
Yeah. Drinking them bevvies.
What are you drinking? Is it Diet Coke?
No, it's a yerba mate. The energy hipster. Drink one.
Hips, okay.
I will be going to the gym later. I'm also so tired. I did nothing today. I did nothing. I've done zero things.
Oh, you had the day off?
Mm-hmm. I went to get my brother's phone fixed, so I did go on the subway for about 2.5 hours in total.
Yeah. But how did he break his phone?
Oh, how didn't he? I brought it to the Apple man, and he took a look at it, and he's like, yeah, that's getting replaced, and just brought out a new phone for him. My brother's 13.
Yeah. 13-year-olds are great with fragile devices. They have a great track record of it.
Yeah, and he came home and walked off with my headphones, so fingers crossed for those.
Uh-oh. This is why growing up, Jason and I always had our own stuff, and he wasn't allowed to touch mine.
Well, there is a big difference, like a pretty big difference between me and my siblings, so it would be wild if I would, like, guard my stuff. There's only, like, 2 years between you guys.
But yeah, 2 years.
Yeah. From me to Ben is almost 7 years, and Zach is 15 years apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can take my
15?
Stuff.
15? You just said he was 13.
He was 13.
He says bar mitzvah. 15. What are we talking about? Okay.
Let's get back on track.
What
is this sleepy energy?
I don't even know. So, okay.
What are we doing this episode?
We're doing Baldur's Gate 2.
Okay.
Act 2. So, we did in our previous episode, we talked about Baldur's Gate Act 1. I digressed heavily into the lore of the Baldur's Gate games. But this time, we're going to focus on Act 2. So, if you haven't done Act 2, this is your warning that there is going to be spoilers. We won't spoil anything from Act 3, at least not intentionally. Hopefully, we don't. Probably won't. We're pretty good at that, I think. Most of the time.
Yeah, probably. We don't talk enough about the things we're talking about, let alone adding additional stuff.
Yeah. So, okay. So, Act 2. What are your initial thoughts when I say Act 2?
Initial thoughts are fun time with Shadow Hearts romance, but because of the recording right now, all I can think about is the lesbians in the camp.
Yeah, Night Song and Isabel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lady Aileen, which actually,
she Aileen, and I thought.
Whatever, I played this weeks ago, Chloe. I don't remember names. It's a miracle I even saw her
name. I don't remember
name spelled
names
in
either,
my mind.
But I remember lesbian names.
Fair. But I actually don't really like Night Song that much. She annoys me.
Why?
It's the, like, okay, Cartoon Thor also annoys me. It's the cadence of their speech
I'd
and
love
the
to
old
hear this
speak
connection.
And stuff.
Okay.
Because they're
you don't
talking
like, that,
like
that righteous, holier than thou speech.
Yeah, that's why I could not stand so many people in the Final Fantasy, like everything, because a lot of them talk like this, and it's like, please don't.
Okay.
Chloe just learned something new about me.
Something I really cannot relate to on any level, but. as someone who's a big fan of Shakespeare and loves a good high-minded speech.
If David Tennant is doing Shakespeare, I'm all for that. I can't even say how much I'm for that.
That was an interesting pull. Why David Tennant specifically?
Because he says even as Doctor Who, he would say a lot of Shakespearean phrases, but also he's got that accent, and when you said Shakespeare, that's the first person that came to mind for some reason. There's also the actor who plays Donna.
I don't know any of the Doctor Who actors aside from David Tennant.
There's a British show that his co-star hosted, and there was a bit where he guested as the Doctor, and he had this whole Shakespeare little speech. And it was just, I'll send you the video and I'll post it in the Discord.
Okay.
But it was just very pleasant to listen to.
Okay, so we're going to unpack this a bit, because you brought us down this rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And I need to know, so it's, you don't mind it, it just has to be specific actors.
I don't, no, because there's the fake way of speaking an olden character, you know what I mean? How Nightsong and Thor from the cartoons would speak. It's so stilted and fake. Cannot stand it. And then there's just a very fun sort of Shakespeare where the characters and the actors are having fun. For example, you know the Romeo and Juliet remake with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yes. Yes, I do.
You know how they all talk to each other and it's very lyrical and back and forth and kind of really cool? That's awesome. Because
it's iambic pentameter.
Exactly. That's awesome. That sounds pleasant.
So if Nightsong spoke in iambic pentameter,
I would be more palatable. Hell yeah, I understand why Lady Isabel wants to climb that tall tree.
Okay. I'm glad we settled that.
And listeners, this is what Chloe does. She just psychoanalyzes me. Last time we hung out, we were talking to a friend about something very deep, and to give her a break, Chloe turned her gaze to me. And then just shredded my life. It was pretty funny.
We didn't psychoanalyze you, did we? We're talking about your resume.
Oh my god.
We were giving you career advice.
Well, that's fine, but it was really funny to be
we shredded Val's resume.
It's totally a bad resume. It's so bad. I don't as a writer. I don't know how I got my resume to be that bad. I don't want to talk about myself, and resumes are all about myself, you know? I don't want to do it, so my brain turns off.
Wait, but what did we psychoanalyze? I don't even remember.
I think we talked about my dating life for a solid 5 minutes.
Did we?
Yeah.
All I remember was talking about Amanda getting her a new job, talking about you getting a new job. I guess dating is so just whatever. I don't even remember it.
No, I said something at some point and all three of you silently stared at me. And I was like, oh my God.
What did you say?
I don't remember. I was just in that moment, it's deer in the headlights of uh-oh. I think it was either you or Sarah that asked me something. And I answered, oh. You know what it was?
What?
I was like, I'm bored on every date I go on. And you're like, that is a very clear sign of depression, Val. That's not good. And all of them just went in on it. I was like, okay, guys, I'm going to go get myself a pretzel.
It's one of those things where it's like, if you say that everyone you meet is a jerk to you, you're probably the jerk. So if every date you go on is boring, it's probably because there's something up with you.
Well, we all clearly know that.
Okay.
Let's get back on track.
Baldur's Gate 3. This has been relationship advice via Baldur's Gate 3, Nightsong, and Isabel. Okay, so...
It sounds like you like Nightsong a lot.
Okay, so she's not my favorite character in Baldur's Gate 3. Mm-hmm. That's probably fair. Be Luzelle.
Fair enough, yeah. She's an excellent character to be a favorite.
She's got like She-Ra vibes to me.
She does.
And I don't know. I just like that, you know, you free her and she is like this force of good. But I just like that sometimes she's just like, yeah, I'm going to kill them all. And like, she's not like lawful good in that way of like, I'm going to appeal to their better nature and we'll all see the good side of things. Blah, blah, blah. No, she's just like, yeah, this guy was a jerk to me. I'm going to kill him. I appreciate that. I appreciate the decisiveness of it. And I appreciate the fact that she just blurts out in front of everyone that she's going to take Isabel back for private times at a certain point.
And very loudly.
Very loudly in front of everyone. Anyways, but that's kind of the end of the act. We should start at the beginning.
Okay, we'll get back to their reunion a little later.
Yes, I want to start with the beginning, which is to ask, did you go through the Underdark or did you come above ground?
Well, as we all know, I forgot to go to the mountain path because I thought it was the same as going from the Underdark.
Yeah.
So
I will give you that the fact that the message is a little ambiguous, it does make you feel.
It's the same message.
Yeah,
same exact
message.
It does
make it feel like you're going between acts, so I understand.
But I went from the Underdark.
Okay. I have done both introductions, I guess, to the second act. So just to describe them as someone who's experienced both. So when you go through the Underdark, you meet the Harpers first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get attacked by shadows and they take you back to the Last Light Inn. And then they say, oh, we're going to go ambush, you know, the absolute cultists on the way. And that's when you run into the Drider,
mm-hmm.
which I think is fine. But honestly, I feel like the entrance, if you enter from above ground from the mountain pass, is so much more compelling because you show up there and you run into absolute cultists and the Drider is there and he's saying all this weird junk about, I don't know, stuff that's going on. And it's really off-putting and he's got that weird extra eye thing and he's all weird looking. And then the goblins you're talking to are basically like, you're one of the absolute followers, a true soul, but we need, you know, this specific thing to pass safely. Why don't you have that? Blah, blah, blah. And you feel like things are really like, I felt like I really screwed up and I was about to walk into something awful. And I don't know, like, I felt like legitimately a lot more scared going above ground versus via the Underdark. I feel like the Underdark one was a little more cut and dry, whereas the mountain pass route kind of set up more of the creeping horror.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't know that that's what happens if you go from the other side. That's really cool. I like that.
And they do intersect because when you go with the absolute cultists, that ambush that happens, you're on the receiving end of that and you get to choose whether you want to drive off the Harpers, like kill the Harpers, or do you want to side with the Harpers and betray the absolute cultists? So they kind of, the stories link up at that point. But I just think above ground is the better way to do it.
You know, I think I still would have preferred the Underdark entrance, just based off of like the summaries. But I see, like, in terms of writing, I do think that the other one is way more compelling because you're entering into like the worst place on Earth and you're surrounded by enemies.
Yes.
And one of those enemies is a very like unstable person.
When you get to the Harpers, you very quickly understand the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Which in some ways is good because I think part of what sets up narrative tension is understanding the stakes. Like if you don't understand the stakes of a narrative, you don't really have tension as much. But what I think the Mountain Pass entrance does more is it keeps the mystery, this kind of, you know, because you enter this shadow cursed land and it's so creepy. And, you know, you did learn kind of in Act One, there were hints that like you need a light source and you need the special light source and you can't actually find that special light source in Act One. You can only find a broken one. And so I feel like it maintains this kind of Lovecraftian style horror, that there is some greater unknowable force at play here.
Yeah.
And it is lurking in the shadows. And I love that, obviously, you know, with my favorite game, Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. They're both fine. It doesn't change things that much. I don't know why I'm belaboring the point so much, but there's two different ways to do it. I recommend experiencing both because they're both very different. And I think they set up the narrative in a different way. So that's going to lead me to, so you went from the Underdark, you met the Harpers. I'm guessing you agreed to go back to their base.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on Jahira?
She's okay. I don't know. The accent is, I'm trying to figure out what kind of accent it is, and I can't. I don't, I can't place it. And I think that just distracts me the most. Every time she talks, I'm like, where is that accent from? Like, what is the voice actor trying to do?
So I think what's going on here, because I agree with you, Jahira's accent has always been weird. So she was in Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, mm-hmm. and I think it was a different voice actor back then. And back then, you know, the quality of voice direction could be kind of all over the place.
What are you talking about? What?
I mean, there were some great ones in Baldur's Gate 2. I mean, that was I think when Jennifer Hale started working with...
Ooh.
Oh, no, she started in Baldur's Gate 1 because she was Dinah here. Yeah, so Jennifer Hale, you know, you had some good names in there. But it was, there was, you know, some mixed quality. And I think Jahira, the actor who played Jahira in Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 was good, but she did have this kind of weird, unknowable accent that was difficult to place exactly. And I think for Baldur's Gate 3, I think it is a different voice actor, but I think they told her to do the same accent.
I see. So it was a continuity thing.
Yeah.
They should not have done that, in my honest and humble opinion. Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be, I know it's supposed to be, because the,
where Eastern she's, European-ish?
Yes, because where Jahira is from, I think she's from an area that is supposed to kind of be kind of like Eastern Europe coded, but in a vague sense, I don't know.
Yeah, I think she's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, for example, Halsin and Jahira are not companions that I ever take with me. I guess it's kind of cool that they're both druids, so they're interchangeable. That way you don't have to take up too many slots for your companions.
Yeah.
But I don't know. All the other characters on our team are so compelling that I don't really care about those.
I think Jahira's there kind of as, not quite as fan service, because I feel like she's a little more... First of all, she's not as fan service character because you can't romance her or I don't know, she's not just there to be other characters feel a little more fan service-y to people who've played through Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. But Jahira, well, first of all, I wanted to note, how often have you played a game where one of the playable characters is an older woman?
Not very often at all. I was going to mention that. I was going to ask you that question
I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, there aren't that many. And, there are some games where you play as older men, because there's, one of the Metal Gear Solids, Snake is old, and...
Pretty often, we play as men in, their 50s.
Yeah.
Which is not old, but it's getting up there. But we don't play Geralt as women in their Rivia, 50s.
The Witcher. He's...
Joel from Last of Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't think as many women. Aside from, there's Jahira. I can't really think of too many others.
Can't think of a single one, actually.
I guess there's is it Samara from Mass Effect 2?
Yeah, but she's she's not older in the game. She's older in canon. She's in canon. Her
matron phase, though, right?
A lot of Asari are, but the graphic limitations never made it feel like that. You know what I mean? This very specifically lets us know that she's older, which is much cooler. I do like Samara a lot, and I think she has a very compelling story. But she's like a mom with teens. You know what I mean? Jahira feels a little older than that. She feels like a... like the eccentric older aunt.
Yeah, she's got great aunt vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I like her. I think they did a good job capturing, I don't know, she's supposed to be pretty, I don't know, clever, I guess is the word for it.
She has Lin Beifang vibes.
Yes. Okay, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, she's like, she deserves to retire, but without her, everything will fall apart, honestly. Yeah. So she's just holding it together.
That's a good way to put it. I think she's too old for this is part of the vibe. And also that she thinks she's pretty much the only competent person.
Yeah. There. Which both are fairly true.
Yeah, the Harpers are pretty hapless.
Oh man. And them pairing up with the Red Fists, is that what it is? Iron Fists? The Red Irons?
Flaming Fist,
yep, thank you. Those guys, those folks. Makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Because, oh wow, are they disorganized.
So let me, okay, I'm going to continue kind of just going through kind
I wanna
of the
ask
plot.
You a question.
Okay, you ask me a question then. Okay,
I want to ask you a question, Chloe.
Ask me a question, Jesus.
Yeah. Which is your favorite boss?
Okay. What's interesting about Act 2 is I feel like you pretty much every boss you can convince them to commit suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, barring Balthazar, but the devil who's trapped in the Temple of Shar, whose name I forget, you can convince him. And it feels so bad because you convince him to kill all his minions, and then you convince him to kill his animal companion, and then you convince him to kill himself. And it feels so bad. You're just like, even mm-hmm. though this guy is a devil who just like would totally love to kill me, it feels really bad to just like, I don't know. It's just, I felt a little bad about doing it.
But, me too. I think out of every single creature that we fight so far in Act 1 and 2, that's the one that I was like a little conflicted on. Not like whether or not I should do it, but just like, would it have been more humane to fight it?
Yeah, that exactly. Ketherick, you can convince him to give up pretty quickly. I think in terms of the fight that was the most challenging for me, that I probably had to be the most tactically minded, was actually Balthazar. Just because he has a lot of undead and they will knock you off into the Shadowfell Abyss if you are not careful, which is what happened on my first playthrough. The moment the fight started, Shadowheart just went right over the edge and died.
That's the undead gentleman?
Yeah, that's the necromancer who's also undead.
I fought him in a room.
Oh, did you fight him before going to the shadow? Okay. Yeah, I guess you could start the fight there, and that probably is easier.
He started it.
Oh, you didn't go to him and like were nice to him?
I talked to him, and then he told me, go get me this weapon that will make your enemy stronger. And I was like, I don't think so, man. I don't think so. And he got big mad.
Play it along.
No, I don't do that. Okay. When people tell me what to do, Chloe.
Yeah, true.
Remember the intro to this episode?
Yeah, fair.
Got my team killed.
Yeah, he'd be a lot easier, because if you don't kill him there, he confronts you where Night Song is being held captive, and you have to fight him and his undead kind of on one of the floating island that Night Song is on. And those big undead can really just yeet your guys into the abyss. So you have to be really careful about positioning.
I see. In my fight against him, it was a lot to do with like the portals. So it was like two fights in one. Because, you know, when you first meet him, you're fighting against creatures that are appearing in the portals versus the undead.
Yeah, the defenses of the Temple of Shar.
Exactly. So I was already, like, a little beaten up, a few spells used. So I went into battle with him there. And he just keeps... I think he either kept bringing undead up, or I don't remember for sure what he did, but there was like a lot of them. And yeah, thank goodness for Shadowheart, because just the Radiant did a lot.
Yeah, that's the Spirit Guardians.
I don't think I had Spirit Guardians at that point. I think it was something else.
She wasn't level 5?
Or maybe I did. I don't remember anything. Okay. Probably I did. I think I turned on the Spirit Guardians, but she has such little movement and the room is so huge that she just like couldn't make it to many of them. But her Sacred Flame actually, for the first time in the entire game, worked more than a quarter of the time.
Interesting. Okay, so you just had a very different experience then.
This is what I love about this game, honestly. Yeah, like, it's so every different. Single person who I've talked to has had massively, wildly different experiences.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that boss fight was the hardest, but I don't know. I really liked the Kether Thorn boss fight, the second one, when you're in the Mind Flayer pit. Where he then not summons because he's dead at that point, but the Avatar Merkel appears.
Yeah, that guy.
That fight was such shenanigans for me on my first playthrough. It was just so okay. I was playing a Sorcedain, so a Wild Mage Sorcerer and Paladin. And the moment the Merkel fight starts, I Wild Mage Surge. And it summons a lava Mephit, so a little lava imp, and Mephits explode when they die.
They sure do.
So, for some reason, Merkel just really hated that lava Mephit. Merkel did not want that Mephit to live. So every attack Merkel made during the whole encounter was targeted at the Mephit, and missed every single one of them until after I had freed Nightsong and eliminated his immortality. And then he finally hit the Mephit, and the Mephit exploded and the lava killed him. So Merkel killed himself in my, again, another boss killing themselves. So that was just the theme of it, was just Merkel killed himself. I mean, I had already done a ton of damage to him, but it was basically no threat at all. My second playthrough, I did not have the lava Mephit, but it was still a pretty easy fight. Especially because if you freed Mizora, she gives Will that rapier that's so powerful.
I didn't have Will with me.
Okay, but you got the rapier?
I don't remember, probably. So
when you freed Mizora, did you tell her like, Will just did you a big favor, you should give him something nice?
I was probably so mean to her. I don't think so.
Okay, because then so she gives Will a rapier that allows you to cast a level 6 summon infernal spell, so you Dang. Get you get a Cambion to fight on your side, and that makes the fight a lot easier.
I see. Well, here's what I did. I just had every single one of my characters use a haste potion.
Yeah.
And Karlach and Lazel just tore him to pieces.
Yeah.
Shadow, I had her Misty Step with scrolls into the like piles of enemies with Spirit Guardians, and that took care of that. But yeah. It was a pretty easy fight. Here's the thing. When I played the first, like, quarter of Act 1 prior to restarting the game, I was playing on regular difficulty.
Yeah.
But, like, while I had way more fun with fights on the regular difficulty, I was just, like, forgetting to pay attention to the story. And I never finish long games because I get, like, so distracted that I just, like, stop.
Yeah.
So I changed it to easy so that I can at least get through the story quickly so we can do these episodes.
Okay.
So for me, fights are just like fairly easy, like nothing happens.
Okay. So what was your favorite boss fight in Act 2?
I liked talking the Toll Lady into emotional distress. and guilt.
Okay.
But every single one of these bosses, except for the surgeon, just, like, made me so sad.
Oh, the surgeon you can also convince to kill himself.
Oh, I know. I'll get to that in a second. But, okay. But yeah. Like, the story behind the toll lady, she was just, like, a mean person who had people pay the toll.
Yeah.
It didn't look like... I don't think there was any evidence of bribery or anything happening. She was just, like, very... She was cruel, I guess, but you know what I mean? Like, she was just doing her job, and that brought her meaning in life. So to see it warped like that, like, I don't know, it made me feel so horrible.
Yeah.
And throughout that whole... All of Act 2 is just me being there, like, oh my god, this is the saddest thing I've ever seen. And then 3 seconds later, like, oh my god, no, this is the saddest thing I've ever seen. So I think talking her into it was the most compelling because she, like, there was a clarity of mind more so than with the others.
Okay.
And that was kind of very scary emotionally.
Yeah.
The surgeon... So I went in there, I talked him into talking the nurses into killing him, because he, like, encourages them. But the only thing about that cutscene is the guy they're torturing gets killed. And I felt so bad that I reloaded and I just walked in there and I just, like, killed him before the cutscene happened. Because then you can free the guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's the only boss that I, like, didn't talk into it.
So your favorite boss, though, is the toll lady?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it had the most emotional damage because, like, if you sneak around and talk to the skulls, it's all so sad. It's just
and the most so physical horrible. Damage if she hits you with that gold attack.
I died immediately, like, 3 times before I figured
same.
It out.
Same. Same. I was just like, how did I take 200 points of damage?
Right? She just took me down, and I was like, okay, I guess... And I kept skipping through the cutscene because I'm like, oh, let me fight her. And then I was like, let me try this one more time. And then I tried a different dialogue option and it got me to get her to, you know.
I know.
This is a sad game. It changed tone so fast.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like Act 2, each act feels like its own separate game.
It does. It does.
And Act 2 is definitely, it's a different vibe, Siren.
yep.
Okay, so just when you were at the Last Sight Inn and you were told to go talk to Isabel, and then that winged guy, the man with the wings, shows up and tries to abduct her, were you able to fight him off?
I was, yeah.
On my first playthrough.
Oh, what happens if you don't?
So here's what happens if you don't, because it's fascinating. So they actually buffed her hit points because it was too easy for her to die to, like, a single good hit from the wing guy. Mm-hmm. So it happened. I was doing fine, actually. And then she provoked an opportunity attack and just got one shot. And so
when she does walk out of a lot of enemies' ranges. Yeah. I'm like, damn, girl, stand still. Please,
just don't move. You're a cleric. You have probably pretty decent defenses, and you can heal yourself. Just don't provoke opportunity attacks. So if she gets abducted, you know, he flies off with her, and since she was the one protecting the inn, the defenses of the inn immediately fall, and all the harpers. And Flaming Fist immediately become monsters.
Oh, I would not have been able to handle that at all.
You have to fight them all. It's just you and Jahira and your party against everyone else. And they're all monsters. And it is a brutal fight.
That, I think that would actually have made me get a therapist in real life.
Okay.
That sounds awful. Because I talk to a lot of them, and most of them are really mean, but some of them are really nice.
Yeah.
And all our friends are in there.
Yep.
Oh my god. Wait, all of them turn as well?
I don't remember the tieflings turn. I think some of them do.
Oh my god. What about the bard?
What's her name? I don't think she does.
Okay. Man, I don't remember that. No, I cannot handle that. I like my stories a very specific way.
Okay.
And there are times when I'm like, yeah, mess me up real good, author. But I have to be in a very specific mood for it.
So I'm guessing you, since you just said you don't like bamboozling people, like you weren't going to lie to Balthazar. Did you go to the Moonrise Tower and like talk to Ketherick and stuff before?
They didn't let me into his room.
Well, no, I mean, like not, but you went to the audience and saw the goblins getting killed. Okay, so you did go there. You did do some bamboozling.
Yeah, but it's more of like, I'll sneak into those places, like I'll talk my way in.
Yeah.
But if someone tells me to do something in a way that's like they're entitled to my services, Val's brain kicks in and I'm just like, no.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
So the half-orc telling you what to do was okay?
No, I was so rude to her.
Okay.
I was just like a troll and she gets really mad, but she doesn't fight.
Interesting.
Yeah, she gets really, really mad at you.
Okay.
And I'm like, huh? Nothing to see here. Goodbye. I think I think something. No, never mind. I'm thinking of a different one.
Oh.
No, because I was thinking that she can be killed, but that's the warden. That's a different one. No.
I mean, you can kill that half-orc. It would be a pretty difficult fight, but you could.
And we do in the final stand. But, yes. No, I just, for some reason, conflated the two. But yeah, no, like, I don't mind being like, yeah, I belong in this place, do-do-do. But then, once it actually, for storytelling reasons as well, like, I have a very specific backstory for my character.
Yeah.
Because that makes the game
What is the specific backstory for your character?
I don't know, it's intimate and secret.
Okay. See, you say stuff. You can't say stuff like that and not tell us.
Well, what can I say? I am a mystery. I'm an enigma.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just like a little backstory that's happening in my little mind as I play the game. Serotonin boost. Do you do that? Do you give your characters little backstories?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But unlike you, I am happy to share mine. I don't care.
Well, that's because you're normal and you're able to talk about your emotions. Oh, the character I'm playing is absolutely not me. The only thing that's me about her is just, like, not listening.
Okay. I'm trying to think about other things that happened before we talk about kind of that final sequence of Act 2. You do meet a Kalishtar, which I thought was interesting because... they're fairly rare.
The guy with the bird.
With the raven, the what's his name? He who is
mean.
I didn't think he was mean. He's just like a little random.
His bird is so mean.
Well, yeah, the bird's mean.
The bird is just garbage. It's the first time ever that I did not feel bad killing a bird.
Okay, but birds are awful people, like, in real life. Birds are not good.
I mean, fair, but a lot of not good birds are very funny. Okay. Sorry, continue.
No, I thought the bird was pretty funny.
Have you listened to Rod Grind? It's a D&D stream podcast.
No.
They have some mean birds, and those birds are hilarious. Like, it's like a bird that's a New Yorker, they'll cuss you out. This bird just, like, was mean to me.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all.
Okay. Birds cannot be mean to Val. But did you do his quest?
I did do his quest. It is so sad, just like every other thing in this whole act. I don't think it's sad.
I think the woman was awful, and she got her just desserts.
I think the woman was in a very difficult and precarious position and was in over her head. She was, of course, at fault. Because she did betray her friend's trust. She did not need to write that down. But I think she saw the mistake she made in the moment. Also, very clearly, we can see that at that point, things were already super bad. So, I don't know, like, stories about people who betray their own out of fear for their personal safety it goes like either way for me, and there's no pattern to as to why. I think it's just like what I'm vibing with at that moment. Okay. And on that day, I was like, it's your fault, but I think you understand that, and you already died for it, same as everyone else. So I did not, I like said, you're forgiven, and then he freaked out on me.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I told her that she's awful and she deserved to die.
That's fair.
And she's gonna spend eternity thinking about her crimes.
What did he do?
He was satisfied with that.
Okay, and then he just, like, walked off?
Yeah, it gives you an item that allows you to summon the raven, and then leaves.
Oh, ew. No, I don't like that bird. No, he attacked me immediately, and I had to kill him and the bird. I was so satisfied killing that bird.
Poor Kalishtar. Poor Kalishtar.
Him, I felt a little bad. The bird, no, I went for it first.
Okay. Dang.
Animal cruelty.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah, ask a question.
Did you go to the little like graveyard where Arabella was and click on the gravestones?
Yes, but I don't remember too much about them.
I think that was actually my favorite part of Act 2 in terms of like gameplay and walking around and interacting with the environment. Because like a lot of those were, some of those were sad, like the ones deeper in, closer to the tomb.
What did they say? For those who don't remember, what did they say?
The ones closer to the tomb were, like, people who were killed, which I guess is, like, maybe the newer part of the graveyard. But the ones at the entrance and a little deeper into it, a lot of them were, like, very poetic and limericky. And it was, most of them were so silly and full of life that it felt like a really nice change of pace. It was like, here lies a lady whose husband loved her for her laugh. And there was something like, here's the, I don't know, like the cobbler whose jokes were really bad. It was a lot of like little things like that, where every single one of them was a very personal tombstone with inside jokes between the community. And it felt really, really good to have that after walking around in this awful place where every single like piece of environmental storytelling lets you know that everything is bad. Because every letter you find is like, oh, I hope Papa returns from war. And then it like cuts off in blood. You know, like it's everything is like that. And then we have that little like area where people who died peacefully are there. And then as you keep like going towards the back, it gets worse and worse. And it's like a family of five who was slaughtered. Like, oh, here we go again. Okay, back at it. But prior to that, having all of those, I clicked on every single one of them because I was like, I need a little bit of this. It was very like dark, but it did show how the community loved each other. And it was really fun to see those because it was a direct mirroring of when you defeat shadows and you click on the little like eggs that drop.
Yeah.
And those are...
Which I didn't do, so I have no idea.
You'd never clicked on anything the shadows dropped?
They drop things?
Yeah, when you kill them, a little like stone falls. And when you click on it, the narrator tells you what that shadow's essence was like. And a lot of it is like, you feel the sun on your skin and as you set out on the journey overseas. Or like, you feel a moment of peace as you see your loved one as everything turns to shadow. It's like a lot of them are really, really dark because it's many of those shadows turned out to be children and like older folks. And just like, I don't know, in terms of storytelling, it's you're killing these shadows, but these shadows are echoes of ordinary people with lives that were just cut short by this curse. It's really sad stuff, Chloe. Okay, so you should have clicked on it and been sad with me.
Well,
that is why the graveyard. I had other
things to do.
That's why the graveyard had such a big effect on me, I think, because like You're just running around this huge open area, and everything is just grim, dark, and sad. And then this is the most natural part of, like, dying in this section, that it kind of, like, recentered me again, like, which is messed up.
Yeah. They did a good job. Do you think Act 2 is too one note, though?
I don't think so, because it's much shorter than Act 1 in my, like, in my experience. It was just, like, this one mission versus Act 1. You're getting introduced to the plot, you're learning things about the world, you're seeing all these different, like, groups that you're meeting that are going to play a bigger part later down the line. And Act 2 is just, like, this place is cursed, get to the tower, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is... But it is interesting that even though it is a very direct story, you and I had very different experiences in it.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, like, I really liked it a lot because... So did you do this thing where you, like, read every single thing you came across?
No.
Okay. Because I really did. And I, like...
I don't read books in video... Like, when unless there's ones that are interesting specifically to me, like... The history of the ball spawn and all that. Like, I read that, but, like, every single thing, it's just too much.
Oh, I don't read any books.
I am here to play a video game. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to read a book, I would read a book.
I read mostly, like, the torn letters and, like, the destroyed package. You know, like, those little things that are, like, three lines?
I
don't read those
unless I think I need them for a quest.
I see. So I think that might be, like, a part of why this might feel very, like, monotone in a sense. But, like, yeah. For me, the whole experience was just, like, the worst place. Like, this purgatory of death and decay and awfulness. And then through it, there were so many, like, little glimpses of life. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
Did you go into the house that was just off of Last Light Inn? There's, like, a little path that gets you into that house, but you can also go through the basement into that house.
I have no idea what house you're referring to. Is there something special in there?
So,
like,
if
obviously,
you...
but...
if you go into Last Light's Inn's basement...
Yeah.
They're, like...
I've never did that.
Oh, okay. There's a whole area in there. It starts, like, this quest to discover... this Salune cult, not cult,
Saluna.
Yeah, whatever, they all say it differently.
They don't.
I think they all say it differently. There's like two or three different pronunciations.
No, because I remember I talked about this with Sarah because we had a whole thing, because we always pronounce it Salune in our campaign, but we learned in this it's Saluna.
But it's in our mind space, Chloe.
Okay, because it's like Luna, like the Saluna.
Yeah, but it sounds better like Salune. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's fantasy world.
It's
make-believe.
Listen.
Look. But anyway, once you go down there, there's like a little secret shrine to her. And a letter you pick up that starts a quest. Where you have to investigate the Mason's Guild.
Oh, I did the Mason. Yeah, I did the
Maybe
Mason's
there's
thing.
A different
There's like, a different way point. To get there. Yeah. Yeah, and you go into the basement and there's the hidden room.
And there, as you go into that basement, into that hidden room, on the way, there's like one of those climb up thingies, the vines.
Yeah.
And when you go up, you end up in that house. And that house killed me immediately. Because the curse there is super strong. Like, it's super strong.
Okay.
And it was before I had any protection, any lanterns, because I went in there very early, almost as soon as I started Act 1 and got to the inn. It was one of the first things I've done. And then I didn't go back to that house until I got the protection. But inside of there is, like, just these two corpses. Hold on, I actually have a screenshot because it was such a moving little moment. I'll send it to you later. If I turn on Steam, my computer is gonna sound like a jet engine. But there is just, like, it's a small, very, very small house. It looks like poets or artists lived there. And there are two skeletons on the bed that are, like, holding each other. and they both have rings on them, like plain rings with inscription.
Yeah.
And there's a letter where they kind of curse the gods that destroyed this place in a very, like, in a very spit in the face of the devil sort of way that I love. And they had, like, a little terrace outside that looks out to the sunset. And I don't know, just, like, it was so sweet. And the fact that that's a place that's so heavily cursed, you're like, oh, they made the gods real mad because they were, like, they went out of this world in their own way. Like, they did not become shadows. And I don't know, just, like, a lot of little moments like that really made this so much richer for me.
I really liked Act. I think Act 2 is my favorite act, but I guess I didn't. I saw these glimmers of hope, but that was not a focus to me.
That's fair. I think a lot of people are not gonna, like, really go into it. I just really like environmental design.
Okay.
I think it's really neat, and world building is fun.
You would enjoy From Software games.
Probably. I think so, because that one time I tried, what's its name, at your house, Elden Ring?
Yeah, yeah.
I had a lot of fun.
Val was pretty good at Elden Ring.
Like, thank you.
This is not just me compliment. Like, you got a lot further than anyone else I've sat with Elden Ring and just had them give it a try.
And I started Nike.
Yeah.
So,
you should. Okay.
I was going to ask you. Question. Me. Yeah, sorry. Ask I know we're me. Going over time, but
we're,
I'm
yeah, we're running
so
out
excited
of time.
About this game. Okay. What did you think about meeting, like, who are your favorite group of companions or people you came across in Act 1 that you meet at the end? Like, what did you think about all of them, like, kind of gathering there as you progress throughout Act 2? Depending on what you do, like, if you are a bad guy, they're not gathering anywhere. But I feel like both of us played fairly good characters.
Yeah.
Did you gather them all?
Yeah, I did the rescue from the basement of Moonrise Tower, and everyone was at the last light in.
Because, when I got there, like, the kids are there, and I think they're... I guess I'm asking you, like, did any of them, like, compel you in any big way? Like, seeing them there, or, like, the reunion of them, or anything like that? I don't know. I'm all about that dialogue with little NPC people. Maybe I'm asking this wrong.
I don't really... I mean, yes, they were there. It was nice talking with them, and it is nice to see how characters, I guess, develop over the course. I don't know what else to say.
Because
I don't know what you're expecting me to say. What, like, what is the answer you're... how would you answer this question that you're asking?
Well, I guess for me, like, when I first got to the inn, Mol was the one that was like, hey, those are my friends, let them in. And yeah. That made my heart grow so much.
Okay.
But also, as I kept, like, bringing people back to the inn, like, rescuing the tieflings, we have a lot of reunions throughout Act 2, just the conversations that these characters have. I don't know, it's just, like, these writers know how to make you feel good. Like, we have the guy who is the wizard man who wants to rescue his friends or siblings. I don't know who they are. But then, like, his story progresses so much. He went from, like, devastated to aspiring alcoholic to just, like, suicide mission to being like, hey, you guys are back and I love you so much. And, like, a lot of those NPCs have, like, character arcs that I really liked. Yeah. Chloe, you don't interact with things I interact with.
I do. I talk to all that. I guess nothing really. I don't know. To me, this arc, this act was all about kind of just this super depressing, sad world that you are trying desperately to, you know, fix a little bit of it. And that's what resonated with me. And all these people who are just making do in the little bit of light that's left.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was the focus. And I didn't really focus as much, I guess, emotionally in my head on the fact that, like, I don't know, the moments of hope or anything. Like, because they're, to me, that's not as important as what was going on in the larger narrative, as well as how the world was working at that point. And that's so, yeah, fair. I interact. I talked to Mole. I talked to all the tieflings. It was sad seeing the one, the wizard guy who was super depressed because his brother and sister.
And the kids are like,
captured.
We're not serving you anymore. How cute is that? They're like taking care of him, even though everyone treats them as little thieves, which they are.
Yeah. No, it's good. I don't know.
Okay. I know we're grossly over time, but I feel like we should talk about the crescendo of the act, the Moonrise Towers and its aftermath.
Yeah, which I have mixed feelings about.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start by saying this. So I thought the confrontation with Ketherick on top of the tower was really great. I didn't so much like the descent into the Mind Flayer lair because I felt very tonally different.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like the start of Act 3 in a lot of ways, just because it totally shifts the thematic through lines of the story so far. And it's shifting into Act 3 at that point. And so I thought, I don't know, why couldn't everything that happened down below just happen in the tower itself? Why do we have to go into this Mind Flayer lair?
Yeah.
I don't see a good reason for it. And I don't know. It just didn't add anything in my mind, and it distracted from the theme, which was this whole plot revolves around Ketherick and his family drama. And I mean, you could have had the same stuff happen, but just set it in the tower. I'm also fine even fighting Mind Flayers in the tower, but just, it was, to me, going into this red, icky, meaty space after the whole rest of the act is about, you know, darkness and light, to me, just, I don't know, it was fine in some, like, it didn't, like, ruin anything, but to me, it was just not the right way to end the act.
You know what it was? I was just very confused as to why the boss battle was divided like that. Like, I thought I was going into that final confrontation, and then we go down there, and then I'm just walking around for another 3 hours, which was fun. I had a lot of fun, like, we learned stuff and whatever, but it felt more like the mountain path than it did, like, a finale to the act.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's an awkward piece that it feels like they didn't quite know how to fit it in there.
Yeah, they could have put it before the final, like, assault on the tower, because you can at some point, like, you can go down there to some piece of it.
Before, like, the final battle?
In the dungeon, there is an area that's just very fleshy. It's like,
yeah, you
dungeon
can see it, but
plus.
You can't actually enter it.
Not the whole thing, but there are areas and chambers where it's just like you're inside Cthulhu.
Okay.
There are a couple of bodies in there that have some neat items on them. So you could walk around in like a very tiny portion of it.
Yeah.
But it's when the gnomes escape and you go behind the prison. Yeah. But
right.
It could have been there. You could have just gone at that point and done everything the same thing, like, and then just had that fight on the roof. That was an epic setting for a fight.
Yeah. I like the rooftop setting a lot more than
four platforms and like a big fella coming out of a hole. Yeah, like I don't know. It was just.
And it's so bright and Ketherick, I don't know. And also, can we talk about what's his name's voice acting? It was not good.
The guy who looks like he's from Final Fantasy or?
J.K. Simmons.
Oh, that was him?
He did Ketherick Thorm.
Oh, okay.
It was bad.
Yeah, he
was
usually
not good
at it.
Yeah, he's usually awesome at playing these villains who are, you know, or characters in general. You know, he's usually slamming his fist on the desk, asking for pictures of Spider-Man. Or,
yeah.
You know,
he was very soft-spoken here, which did not fit.
Yeah.
Everything that was said about him.
He's supposed to be undead, so I guess he was kind of told you're supposed to be this emotionless undead guy, but like he just sounded bored.
Yeah, I was like very surprised when we met Ketherick, because after being in that area for so long and seeing all the bad that he's done and being like, oh, it's just a guy.
Yeah.
It's just a depressed man.
Yeah, it I was just baffled about, like, otherwise a lot of strong voice acting, yeah. And his was just bad.
Especially for someone with such, like, a big list of pretty successful roles with voice acting, too.
Yes, yeah. I mean, he was in Legend of Korra. He was,
Tenzin?
Tenzin, yeah.
He was also in... He's done voice acting. Invincible. He was Invincible. In a lot of things.
Yeah.
But here, he's just, like, a very bored homophobe.
That is pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cannot believe that the guy destroyed an entire region so that his daughter does not date a woman. Oh my god.
I mean, yeah,
he is probably... And his wife is in there as well somewhere.
The most murderous homophobe of all time. Cuthric Thorm. Any final thoughts? I'm setting a timer. You have 20 seconds.
Final thought?
Now.
The best hug in the game so far is Isabella reuniting with Nightsong, hands down. Way better than us hugging Karlach for the first time after we fix her heart. And that was pretty heartstring tugging. It was a good hug. They, like, spun each other and stuff. Very gay. Perfect. How about you? Final thoughts.
My final thoughts is this act is so depressing, and I love the horror of it, and it just makes me want to play Bloodborne, and in a good way. And I just think it's the narrative cohesion of it, and just the world that it creates is just spectacular, and it's my favorite act. And also Nightsong is really good, and so is Isabelle, and they have a good relationship.
And she has running mascara, and Shadowheart and her have, like, a little rivalry.
Yeah.
Remember when, if you have Shadowheart in your party, like, they talk to each other, and Isabelle calls her a Sharon dog, and Shadowheart just makes a face, and I'm like, she got you on that one, you have no comeback, that was great. Yeah. Chloe, anyway. What do we have?
Thank you all so much for tuning in. I just want to mention our social media. We have a Twitter, Instagram, and
We have a
Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. It is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. We have a Tumblr.
InMediaLez. Oh my god. ThePodInMediaLez.tumblr.com.
There we go. We have a link to our Discord in the description. Our website is InMediaLez.com, and you can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who is anyone.
Thank you, world.
Listening to this thing. Yeah, yes. And I don't know. I'm trying to think of a clever Baldur's Gate phrase.
Well, first I have to say, and we'll see you in the next one. And then you go.
These boots have seen everything.
Oh, perfect. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Also, it helps us grow, and we appreciate every single one of you who follows. And if you like us, tell a friend. Just be like, hey, these two lesbians are talking about other lesbians, gays, non-binary folk, and really queer people. Once again, thanks for listening, and we really appreciate you.